Excellent. All right, so welcome. Thank you all so much for coming. It's nice to see a packed room, well, more or less. So in this session, we're going to be talking about a lot of the cool features that you're going to want to take advantage of when you're building your Windows Server 2012 clusters. We'll also get into some cool things that you'll be able to leverage if you're going to be putting Hyper-V on those clusters as well. But we do have a lot to cover, so we'll just get started. Please hold your questions till the end. We'll save some time for Q&A, and then, of course, we'll be available later as well. For now, I'm going to pass it over to Rob here. Rob is a program manager on the clustering team. He specializes in SQL high availability, and he's going to kick us off. Rob?
Thank you. Thank you, Lalithra. So my colleague, Lalithra Fernando, PM on the Hyper-V team. Lalithra will be speaking later in the session, demonstrating Hyper-V features that leverage the failover clustering infrastructure that we provide in Windows Server 2012. Our objectives today are to talk about the infrastructure that failover clustering provides and the Hyper-V platform. We'll talk about the features that are new in failover clustering in 2012, and then Lalithra will talk about the new Hyper-V features that take advantage of those capabilities. So we're very excited to be here. Let's just take a few. Let me just ask you guys. So please, so how many of you, raise your hand if you are running a failover cluster currently. So, all right. Look at that. Okay, next, please raise your hands if you are running SQL Server. All right, a lot of you. Hyper-V, if you're running a Hyper-V workload. Okay, that's the rest of you. Now, how about Exchange? Any Exchange fans? All right. And File Server. Okay, wow. Okay, we have the right people in the room. That's really good. Okay, at the highest level, failover clustering and Hyper-V and System Center are used to build private clouds. Has anyone here heard of this thing called a private cloud? Okay, I hope so. So in this session, we'll be talking about the layering, how failover cluster provides infrastructure, Hyper-V provides a platform, System Center provides management. It's all about additional flexibility, availability, and manageability. So this is what it's all about. So one slide for my perspective. So for me, Windows Server 2012 is all about building a private cloud on your terms, building it out your way. So we try to give you as much flexibility as possible to use the storage topology you want to use, the networking topology you want to use, the components that you want to use from the, you know, based on the relationships that you already have. So the idea is to give you guys the flexibility to do it on your terms, to meet your security policies, your network policies, to deliver value to the customer the way you need to deliver it. Now, we listen to your feedback. Your feedback is really important to us. We spend a lot of time talking directly to you. And as you're about to see, some of the new, almost all of the new features in 2012 have been inspired by your feedback and our conversations with you. So let's get started. So first, I want to show you Server Manager. So I just want to show you how you get started with Hyper-V and failover clustering. So what I have here is I've RDP'd into my Windows 8 client machine. One feature in Windows Server 2012 that we're highlighting is the capability to run your server machines as server core machines. So your server machines don't need to have the UI on them at all. But when you don't have the UI on them, how do you manage them? Well, you can use PowerShell, which is very effective. And you can also use the UI remotely from a Windows 8 client machine. So here you see that I've installed the RSAT tools on my Windows 8 client, and I can see all of the servers in my clusters, and I can manage them here from my Windows 8 client. So imagine, if you will, that these are all server core machines and they have no UI on them. That's fine. So from here, I'm going to show you how we're going to go to machine zero, and we're going to install roles and features on machine zero. So this is a machine that I just built out last week, and I'm simply selecting it. I'm going to install the Hyper-V role and all the features that it requires. And then for the failover clustering infrastructure, I'll install the failover clustering feature there. And that's all it takes. Push next. Push next. So it's realized that I've selected Hyper-V, and so it's customizing the selection for me. And I can take the defaults or I can customize them. All right. So on this configuration, just so you know, I've taken all the defaults. And then you just push install. So this shows you how I can manage core machines from an RSet desktop. So I don't have to do a separate remote desktop connection to each node that I'm managing, or each server that I'm managing. I can just manage them all from a Windows 8 client. As long as I have the authorization to do so, I can do that. Okay. So let's go back to the PowerPoint. So that's one example of management streamlining that we've done in Windows Server 2012. I want to talk about cluster validation. This is the next step in building out a cluster from the ground up. So since Server 2008, we've had this model where you pick the components, you pick the storage topology, you pick the network topology, and as long as your cluster passes cluster validation, then we'll provide support for it. So this is a very powerful model that really gives you many, many options. And we've enhanced cluster validation. So in Server 2012, cluster validation is 6 times faster than an R2. We provide a feature called targeted LUN validation. So on the command line, you can identify an individual disk, a new disk, and validate that new disk before you add it to the cluster. We've built in the Hyper-V storage tests, all the firewall tests. We've built that directly into cluster validation. So out of the box, that's all there in cluster validation. So actually, let me just show you. Let me just take a moment here to show you what a validation report looks like. So I'm going to go directly to my failover cluster manager. So this is a cluster that I've already set up. In the failover cluster manager, there's 4 main sections for each cluster. There's the roles that I'm running, the nodes that are in the cluster, the storage that's in the cluster, which is composed of disks and pools, and then the cluster networks. Now, you can click on the cluster, and you can always say, view the validation report. So this will show you the latest validation report that passed on this cluster. Now, in my case, this cluster seems to have passed, but with warnings. One thing I want to show you is, let's go find the cluster validation reports. So cluster validation reports are always stored on the cluster in the Windows directory in cluster reports. So here you can see all the reports. It's an MHT file. It's a single file, which makes it easy to send by email, send to a colleague to request help. Now, I want to show you this. This is the very first validation report that I ran on this cluster last week. Now, in this validation report, it's identified that I have a problem with my Hyper-V configuration. So even though there are hundreds of tests that are performed during cluster validation, it's very easy for me to navigate through this and to find the issue. So cluster validation has run hundreds of tests on my cluster, different Hyper-V tests and different storage tests, and yet I've quickly gone to the central issue that's blocking validation. In this case, it's a typical error. This is pretty much Hyper-V error number one. So very common scenario. So in this particular cluster, I have different network cards, which is, it's fine. But the default virtual switch has different names. So I had to go into the Hyper-V manager and change the name of the virtual switch so it matched. And then it passed cluster validation. So just a quick example of how handy the validation report is. So I can either navigate back to the summary or back to the top of the file from pretty much from anywhere in the cluster validation report. Oops, it just jumped on me. Okay. All right. So cluster validation, very important conceptually. It's at the heart of what we do because of it gives you so much flexibility. All you have to do, get your cluster to pass validation, we will support it. Windows Server 2012 contains many, many cluster improvements. The most important improvement is probably scalability. So we handle up to 64 nodes. That's four times the number of nodes from R2. In R2, we supported 16 nodes in a failover cluster. In 2012, we support 64. We support 4,000 VMs on a failover cluster. So any of you running VDI scenarios? VDI. All right. So for those of you who are running VDI or considering VDI, this is very important for you. So many of our customers have come to us and asked us to support larger and larger clusters because VM mobility within a cluster is very easy. Now, as Lalitha will describe later, we now support VM mobility in and out of clusters. But for those of you who are interested in VM mobility inside a cluster, 64 nodes will provide you a lot of room for growth. CSV. So those of you who are running Hyper-V workloads on your cluster are probably running on CSV. We've made significant improvements to CSV. So CSV is the default, is now a default out of the box. What CSV will provide you is CSV also provides additional and better I/O redirection and I/O handling. So anytime that you have shared storage for your nodes, we recommend CSV. CSV will provide you better resiliency. Because of its ability to change I/O paths, CSV can protect you not only from node failure, but also from network failures and from storage card failures. So because the CSV can redirect and use a different I/O path. So we can take advantage of all the wiring that's running through the cluster. There are many other advantages of CSV that we've added in 2012. One of the key pieces of feedback has been support for backups and snapshots. So those of you who intensively back up your Hyper-V systems that are running on CSV, we've heard about some of the pain points, and we've addressed those in Windows Server 2012. Okay, let me just show you quickly how easy it is to add a disk to CSV. This was based on another piece of feedback that we had. So when I go to my disk view in the cluster, I can see all these disks. I can just pick any disk that's in available storage, and with a single click, add it to cluster shared volumes. There we go. It was that fast, it's that easy. So almost a non-event. But the point is that we've made every effort to streamline operation of the cluster. So file-based storage for Hyper-V. A new role, a new cluster role, is the continuously available scale-out file server. This role provides a continuous namespace, a single namespace, for your file server. It allows you to add nodes to your file server without having to go in and manage different permissions for different nodes. So it's almost seamless scale-out. The continuously available scale-out file server works seamlessly with cluster shared volumes underneath to provide you both scale and resiliency. So as your clients are adding connections to your scale-out file server, we distribute the file connections across the nodes. So you don't have a single node that's getting hot in your file server. We distribute out the file handles. Also, with the new SMB3 protocol, we can leverage something called transparent failover. So clients using the SMB3 protocol can leverage transparent failover. It's what this means is when there's a failure, when there's a node failure, we can detect, the cluster can detect the node failure, and it can remap the file handles seamlessly and to other nodes that are running on the file server, and the client connections, the client I/O remains uninterrupted. So clients do not get a connection error. There's no disconnection at all because the file handles are moved transparently. This means that both Hyper-V and SQL Server, which are SMB3 aware, can take advantage of transparent failover. It means that as you're saving state of your Hyper-V machine, if there's a failure, the file handles will be moved if they're based on this continuously available scale-out file server. It means that if you're running SQL Server and you're doing transactions against a data store that's on Hyper-V, that, again, if there's a node failure, the handles will be transparently remapped to nodes that are running. So we're very excited about that. Using CSV also allows you to leverage a concept that we call asymmetric storage, or an asymmetric configuration in your cluster. On the left-hand side, you see a traditional stack where there are two clusters. There's a file server cluster and then a Hyper-V cluster. So you have storage on the bottom cluster, and then you have compute up on your top cluster. Based on feedback from customers, we've heard that it would be nice to have just a single cluster that can do both storage and compute because it's easier to manage. So some customers will want to take advantage of the new asymmetric capabilities. If you have an asymmetric cluster, like the one on the right, you can see that you could actually scale that out. You can scale out that cluster based on your usage patterns. So if you have bottlenecks around storage, you can simply add nodes that have storage cards and connect it to storage. If you're finding that you're getting bottlenecks on compute, you can add compute nodes that simply have network capability. So we think this is additional flexibility that a lot of you will enjoy. In fact, we have a lot of customers who are already running asymmetric configurations. Another huge advantage here, and just a quick plug for CSV, is the concept of the CSV block cache. So highlighted here, the CSV block cache is a hot feature that really enables your read-intensive workloads. So for those of you who are thinking about VDI, CSV block cache provides incredible performance throughput. So based on a couple of tests that we've run so far, we're seeing a 20 times cold boot improvement on VDI scenarios that are using the CSV block cache. Basically what it enables is enables CSV to use the system, use the server memory as a cache. So you can carve out a piece of the memory on the server to use as a cache. So pretty nice feature. And we have a blog article on CSV block cache. All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about check disk. Check disk has been vastly improved in Windows Server 2012. How many of you have had to run check disk on a large disk? Okay, so, and now, hopefully you can feel good about this in Windows Server 2012. We have a little problem because we can't find a disk that's big enough that takes over 3 seconds to run check disk on in Windows Server 2012. So, as a reward, if you can find one for me, I'll buy you a latte. So that's your prize. Come and see me. So check disk, vastly improved. So the check disk algorithm itself has been changed so that it's continually scanning for bad sectors. So when you run a check disk repair operation, it already knows the sectors that are bad, and it can quickly go and repair them. Since check disk is so fast, if you're running CSV, there's zero offline time for check disk. In other words, we're continually fixing any sectors that are flagged as issues. So if you think about that, instead, check disk is not only very fast, but since we're continually repairing under using CSV, then this really eliminates a lot of potential downtime that you can have due to disk issues. So the way that works is CSV is able to buffer I/O while it's doing a repair. And then the file pointers are restored. So huge improvement there. CSV also provides increased security. So for situations where you want to run a cluster in an environment that might not have data center level security. And let's face it, there are several, right? So if you have a retail store and you have a point of sale system that has an in-store database, for example. So you've got SQL Server running on Hyper-V and you've got a small cluster there in a store. You might need additional security, right? You might have, say, disgruntled staff, or you might have some maintenance people come in and decide that they want to take the cluster or they want to take the disks out of the cluster. So therefore, you want to BitLocker protect this system. Another scenario might be, for example, you might have a small isolated cluster running for something like a cell tower or something like that. Okay, let me show you what that looks like. So BitLocker encryption of a CSV volume is quick. So here on my first cluster, I've got this disk. So, and we're going to cluster it. So you see I have these disks that are in cluster shared volume. They're in CSV. And we're going to go ahead and, so I've picked disk 6. This is cluster storage volume 6. So I'm going to use this command, the manage BDE status command, to have a look at the current status of CSV volume 6. Okay, so this is reporting that CSV disk is fully decrypted. See, so it's fully decrypted. and there are no protectors on that disk. There's a single command for encrypting BitLocker, and it's here. Now, the first time that I run this, I'm going to get a warning. It's going to say, hey, wait a second, I can't encrypt this thing because it's still being used. So I'm going to go over to the failover cluster UI, and there we go, there's six. I'm going to put this disk into maintenance mode. So more actions, turn on maintenance mode. So both disks and nodes can be put into maintenance mode in Windows Server 2012. So it's handy for operations like this. So as you'll see, it's just changed the status to maintenance mode. I'm going to go back to PowerShell, and I'm going to run this command again. So now it's running the BitLocker encryption process. While it's doing that, it's important that, so yeah, again, if we want, we can see that BitLocker is working. Let's have a look at that. Let's see how much it's done. So just in the past couple of seconds, it's about 17%. So this is a 1 gigabyte volume that it's encrypting. Okay, now a critically important step when you're running BitLocker is to add the security descriptor for the cluster so that the cluster can use it. So this is my cluster, Rob Hines C1. And I'm going to add my cluster security descriptor as a protector on that volume. So I can do it while it's encrypting. And there we go. One thing that I forgot to note that you need to know is we specified the recovery password option when we set encryption. And this is the recovery password that you'll need to take note of. So give me a second. There it is. So you see it there. You need to take note of that recovery password so that if you ever have an issue, you can recover. Okay, let's have a quick look to see what the progress is. If we're done, that's great. If not, we'll move on. Oh, it's fully encrypted. Look at that. So we're done already. Okay, now the next step, in order to allow the cluster to use this, we need to take the disk out of maintenance mode. So you'll see that it'll be offline for a moment until the cluster can decrypt the drive and bring it online. There you go. So now I can continue to run and leverage that volume fully encrypted on my cluster. Storage spaces. Who here has heard of storage spaces? All right. So who here is interested in cost-effective storage for their high availability solutions? Anyone? Okay. So, all right. So storage spaces allows us to use cost-effective storage commodity controllers to add storage to a Windows Server 2012 system. Since it's shared storage, CSV supports storage spaces. So you can cluster a storage space. And let me show you how to do that. So there are a few notes that storage spaces currently support a SAS bus type only, and non-RAID controller cards. My colleague Darren Moss, has a session all exclusive to storage spaces if you want to find out more. Let me show you how we add a storage space. So I'm going to go to my other cluster over here. Oh, password. Okay, now this is a great time for me to forget my password. Okay, so here's my cluster. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and create a storage space. We do this in three steps. First, we're going to create a pool. Then we're going to create the space. Then we're going to create a volume. And step 3B, we will go ahead and cluster the storage space that's presented to the cluster. So let me just show you what I have over here. If we go to the disk manager and you just, if we want to look at what the machine sees at this moment, I have presented to this machine, there are three disks. These disks are online. They're initialized, but there's no volume on them. They're unformatted, no volume. Okay. So, we click on pool. We use the menu, new storage pool. That didn't just pop up behind. Okay, there we go. So we'll give this a moment. Okay, we're ready to begin. So this is the third pool that I have on this cluster. So let me just name it pool 3. It wants us to verify that this is the cluster here comprised of nodes 6 and node 7. We'll pick those three disks that were presented to the cluster. And then we'll create the pool. All right. So next we can create a space from the pool. We click on the pool. And then we say add virtual disk or new virtual disk. So we're going to pick pool 3 to carve out this disk. Let's call this space 3. I'm going to select mirror. We can select simple or mirror. Parity is not yet supported. So let's keep this quick. Let's go ahead and create, say, 3 gigabytes. And let's go ahead and create the space. All right. The next step is to create a volume on that space. So indeed, this is where we want it. And we can, I'm going to go with the default there. And we'll take it. We can assign a drive letter at this point. and NTFS is great. Let's go ahead and create that. Okay. Close. When we look at the disks now, we should see that we have our new storage space. We're looking for space 3. Okay. And I believe it's this one. There it is. So you can see that in the properties of the disk, space 3 is the title. The cluster views it simply as a disk. It's simply a disk to the cluster. Okay, now let's try our right-click trick. We're going to add it to cluster shared volumes. And there you go. We have a 3 gigabyte clustered mirrored storage space that we've carved out of cost-effective storage using commodity controllers. All right. I want to talk about three other features that we've added in Windows Server 2012. We've heard a lot of pain points around Active Directory issues. And there are many of you who have restricted Active Directory environments. So in Windows Server 2012, by default, the cluster is created under the same OU that the nodes are created in. Right? So it's no longer in default computers. Although if you want it in default computers or in any other OU, you can specify the LDAP distinguished name on creation of the cluster. You can do that either in the UI when you're creating the cluster, or you can do that from PowerShell when you're creating the cluster. Other improvements that we've made with Active Directory is we now support Active Directory less cluster bootstrapping. So if you suffer a power loss and the power for a cluster fails, then when the power is restored, the cluster can come up before the domain controller is available. So for those of you who have virtualized your domain controller, right, this will help you out.
Actually, if you have a slow-moving Cisco switch, that will help you out.
Or if you have slow infrastructure. We've also improved support for branch office deployments with read-only domain controllers and DMZ scenarios. So if you're deploying a cluster in either of those scenarios, it's significantly easier now in Windows Server 2012. Node vote weight is now configurable. In scenarios where you have a stretch cluster, your cluster is stretched across two sites, you may choose that the nodes that are on your disaster recovery site have no vote. This is important to keep when you want to keep your primary site as available as possible. If you happen to lose connectivity between the two sites and there's a node loss, many customers choose not to have the nodes that are in the disaster recovery site vote on whether the cluster should survive or not. In other words, if there's a problem on the primary site, the disaster recovery nodes don't get a vote. They coexist in the cluster, but their vote is not counted. Dynamic quorum. There's a great story around dynamic quorum. We were working with a customer who was intensively testing the failover scenarios. And this customer had a strict SLA requirement and also had a very tight budget. He was also very vocal, so that helped. So his argument was that if he had a three-node cluster on his primary site, he wanted, every time there was a failure of a node on the primary site, he had to run into the data center and reconfigure the quorum value, reset the quorum value, so that it could survive another node failure. So he said, look, if I've got a three-node cluster, it should be able to handle two sequential failures in a row, right? And he said, look, this is last man standing, and you know, I want my cluster to handle this scenario, last man standing. And we thought about this, and we said, you know what? We can make the cluster smart enough to reconfigure its quorum vote setting when there's a node failure, so that the cluster itself is more durable. So this will feed into some of the features that Lilithra will show you. Dynamic quorum is a very useful feature. It's now the default feature for a cluster. So you can go back to the other quorum models if you prefer them, but we think that dynamic quorum is going to be so useful. It's now the default quorum model used when you create a cluster. Clustered shared tasks. Clustered schedule tasks. So we heard from a lot of you that when you wanted to perform regular maintenance on a cluster, it was a little painful. That you had to go in there and work with the task scheduler on each node and you know configure it so that these tasks would run on a regular basis. In order to make that maintenance easier in Windows Server 2012, we've introduced clustered schedule tasks. In other words, the task scheduler is fully cluster aware. If you have maintenance tasks that need to be performed on the entire cluster, every node, there's an option for that. If you need to perform maintenance on a specific node by name, you can do that. If you need to provide maintenance or a scheduled task on a node that has a specific resource, say the nodes on the cluster that are running Hyper-V, then you can do that. So this is a handy integration. It's implemented via PowerShell, available to you via PowerShell. And we hope that will save a lot of time. I want to talk about node drain. So we got a lot of feedback about node maintenance and node drain. In Windows Server 2008 R2, the evict command can be used to remove a node from a cluster. But before that, you have to move all the resources off the node, and then you can evict the node. Then you can power down the node or perform maintenance on it, install new drivers, whatever you need to do. We heard that we need to improve that process. So we've introduced node drain. Node drain is a single-click operation, which allows you to drain the roles off of a node. Then you can perform your maintenance, add RAM, reboot the node, and then you can fail the roles back. It remembers the roles that were there, and it will pull them back from the other nodes. Let me just give you a quick demo of that. Oops. Okay. So if we go back to my first cluster, don't tell me it's asleep. Come here. Aha, RDP. I have faith. All right. What's my password again? And can I type it correctly? Yes. All right. Okay, node drain. Suppose I want to put node 1 into maintenance. I've got 4 VMs running here. I simply select the node, and I say pause, drain roles. A one-click operation, live migration will kick in, and it will move those resources. So the cluster is smart enough to figure out that these are VM resources, and it will use the appropriate action to move them off. So in a few moments, if all goes well, I'll be ready to reboot node 1, and I can bring node 1 down. OK, who wants to wait for this, and who trusts me? All right, let's move on then. So And as you can see, you get status continually updates there. So, but what's going to happen is all the VMs or the other roles, whatever they are, will be moved seamlessly off the cluster. I can reboot node one, and then I can use the other menu command. I can say pause resume. I can use pause. I can say resume fail roles back when I want to move, when I'm ready to reuse node one. Okay, so this leads me to my final point. Node drain. So node drain is the foundation for many features that are used in clustering. One of the more important ones is cluster-aware updating. So again, we got a lot of feedback that in 2008 R2, we needed to improve the patching story for clustering. And that's what we've done. There's a new feature called cluster-aware updating. It's installed when failover clustering is installed, and it's easy to set up and activate. There's a separate session on it, but in a nutshell, cluster-aware updating allows you to pull updates either from Windows Update or from Windows Server Update Service. So the Windows Update agent can pull updates from either of those places. This feature can run either outside of the cluster or inside of a cluster. So it's cluster-aware. So even if you have a two-node cluster, you can run cluster-aware updating on one of the nodes. What it'll do is it'll use node drain, pull the roles off of the other node, patch it, reboot it if necessary, then it'll fail back all the roles, it'll resume, fail back all the roles, and then it'll move itself over to the other node. And then it'll do the same sequence of steps to the node that it started on. So even on a two-node cluster, you can automatically patch it. We expect this will greatly reduce the patching burden for clustering, and especially when used with server core. It should work out really well. Okay, those are the infrastructure improvements in failover clustering for Windows Server 2012. Lalithra, over to you.
Thanks very much, Rob. So Rob just talked about the improvements to clustering. So now let's talk about what happens when you put Hyper-V on top of that failover cluster with Windows Server 2012. Now, of course, we do have some improvements in placement. We're better aware of your available memory resources, and we're also NUMA aware if your VMs are large enough. Another improvement is VM priority. Now, VM priority, I think this is something that a lot of you have wanted for a while. What it lets you do is it lets you tell the cluster, hey, these are my high priority virtual machines. These are the VMs that I care a lot about that my users need every morning. And then I have some medium priority VMs, and then I have some low priority virtual machines. Now what this means is that, well, think about when you're designing your cluster with Windows Server 2008 R2. You need to save some space for failover, right? You need to have some excess capacity so that if something happens and a node goes down, the VMs can come up in that space that you saved for. But with VM priority, you could just fill that extra space with low priority VMs because we have preemption. So let me just show you how that works. So I'm just going to switch over to my demo here, which has left. Okay, so I have a simple cluster here, and I have a couple of virtual machines. I see alpha 1, 2, 3, 4 of varying priority. You see this column here tells me the priority of the virtual machine. And now on my beta node, I just have two low priority virtual machines once this loads. So let's see what happens when we fail over this alpha node. Let's see what happens to these virtual machines. So I'm going to go ahead and actually just restart it and Yeah, I am sure. Didn't want to do that accidentally earlier. So, okay, that's gone through. And now I see that the node is down, and the virtual machines have disappeared from there, and it's starting to come up on this beta node. Now, this beta node doesn't have a lot of resources, but I already see first, point out, the high priority virtual machine is the first one that started. Next up, the medium priority, that was just so fast. But the medium priority virtual machines then tried to come up, but there weren't enough resources to host both those medium priority virtual machines and those low priority VMs. So look what we've done. We've stopped the beta VMs, the beta 1, beta 2 virtual machines that were low priority, to make space for those medium priority virtual machines. So that right there is VM priority in action. And now you see how with preemption, you get some extra space without having to pay for another box. Moving on. Live migration. All right, we all love live migration. And if you've been playing around with the beta, or if you've heard some of the other sessions, you know it's much, much improved with Windows Server 2012. You can now, for the first time, live migrate outside of clusters. You can live migrate with nothing shared but the Ethernet cord. We can better saturate your NIC, all sorts of improvements. But of course, inside of clusters, live migration is improved as well. First one I want to talk about, live migration queuing. Now, have you ever wanted to move, say, 10 virtual machines off a server? How would you do that today if you were to do it in the UI? You have to open a failover cluster manager, select the first VM of 10, hit move, wait. Next one. That's a lot. Let's just see with live migration queuing, it's very simple. If I go back to my demo, I'm going to connect to this other cluster here. And my N1 node has a couple of VMs on it, and I want to move, say, 3 of them. I'm just going to multi-select once these commands go through. And I can just, with one action, move these virtual machines. And I don't even have to specify which node. The cluster already knows, hey, I'm going to move it to the other node. And I see right here, I'm live migrating 2 of the virtual machines, and the third one is queued and will complete once those live migrations are completed. The third one will start up without you having to do anything. My hands are off the keyboard. So this is live migration queuing in action right now. And as you can also see, it's also using another feature of live migration, which is concurrent LM. What this means is that you can now move more than one virtual machine at a time. Right now, I'm moving 2. That's just the default. You can move as many virtual machines as your environment supports. It just depends on your network bandwidth. Yes, the high priority virtual machines. Yeah, we do sort. We'll move the high priority VMs first, and then the medium, and then the low. So those are, yeah. So I'm just going to switch back to the PowerPoint. So these improvements to live migration, we take advantage of them in the cluster. The node drain feature that Rob showed you just a little while earlier, that's using live migration queuing if you have virtual machines in your cluster. Failback uses this. Clusterware updating, of course, uses this. If you want to know more about live migration, go check out Ben Armstrong's session, Virtualization 304. It's tomorrow afternoon. He'll get into how all the improvements work. And he'll also talk about another mobility enhancement, which is storage migration. Now, storage migration means that the virtual machine keeps running while you're moving its storage files, while you're moving its hard disk, its configuration files, whatnot. And the key point is this works great in clusters. It works great in clusters. So if you are like Philip, who came up to me on Monday when I was at the booth, and he was telling me about his environment. He has an iSCSI scan, and he wants to put in a fiber channel SAN. He was asking, oh, it's going to be such a pain. I have to come in on the weekend. But if you were running Windows Server 2012, you could just use storage migration. And Monday morning at 9 o'clock, you could start putting your new SAN in production, and your users wouldn't know because the virtual machine keeps running. And what these mobility enhancements do is it enables you to move your virtual machines across your entire data center. You can move with nothing shared from your standalone host to your CSV. You can add it to the cluster while the virtual machine is running. Yes, we do know that in 2008 R2, we asked that you turn off your virtual machine before you made it highly available. But with Windows Server 2012, just add it, keep the VM running. And you can move around in that cluster. And if you're like some of our customers who have multiple clusters, some of them like to have a staging cluster and a production cluster, and you want to move it from staging to production, fine, uncluster it, line migrate with nothing shared, and the VM keeps running. PowerShell. Okay, so how many of you use PowerShell today? All right, that's quite a bit of you. Exciting. So if you're not already using PowerShell, and you're a little bit interested based on what you've heard, check it out. It's really, really powerful. Hyper-V in Windows Server 2012 has new commandlets now, and there's 162 commands. You can do anything you can do in the UI, you can do in PowerShell. And then there are some features that are only available in PowerShell as well. And of course, if you heard the keynote, Windows Server has 2,400 commandlets all up. You can do a lot of cool things with PowerShell. Now, if you don't already know, the cluster team put in PowerShell commands in Windows Server 2008 R2. Now we're introducing new Hyper-V commands, and of course they work well together. And they work well together with the pipeline. So the way we enable this is with these linking commandlets, which are your get VM, get cluster group, get cluster resource. And what these linking commandlets do is it makes clear what sort of objects you're working with and what type of actions you're trying to take. If you're trying to take a VM-specific action, and you're starting with a cluster object, you want to pipe it through get VM, and out comes a virtual machine that you can do all the VM things you want to do. If instead you're trying to set a cluster parameter, pipe that virtual machine through get cluster group, and you can set all the parameters you want. So let's actually just see that in action. So I'm using the ISE here. If you aren't already using it, check it out. It gives you syntax highlighting, all sorts of cool features. You get this nice list of all the commandlets down the side. It's a great way to learn and get started. So I'm just going to close this command pane just so you can see more on the screen. Let's start with the simplest command, get, right? I'm going to get this VM that's running on this node, N2. And I want to add it to a cluster. If I want to see the list of commandlets, I'm going to use the get command, commandlet, and then search for commandlets that start have VM in the name, because I'm trying to add a VM. And there's a lot of those commandlets, and I'm trying to add it to a cluster. So how do I do that? I think you can see the commandlet we're looking for. We're looking for the add VM to cluster, which is actually an alias for the add cluster virtual machine role commandlet, which is a clustering commandlet. Now, the reason we did this was so that if you're somebody who's starting with the Hyper-V commandlets and don't know about the clustering commandlets, we saw in usability studies, hey, I don't know how to add this to a cluster. So we want to make sure we have this alias so that it's discoverable. So if you're just looking through the list of Hyper-V commandlets, you can discover, hey, there's this module of these cluster commandlets that I can do other things with. Now let's go ahead. And just add that VM to the cluster. So if you already know about the pipeline, you see this in action right now. I'm taking a virtual machine, and I'm piping it, which is basically taking the output of that virtual machine and using it as the input to the add cluster virtual machine role. And I'm adding it to this cluster right now. Oops, it's being a little slow. All right, so that VM is part of the cluster now. Now, if I want to see what the cluster group is, I just pipe it through get cluster group. I can see all the properties here. I see priority is set to 2000. If I wanted to set it to high priority, if this is high priority virtual machine for me, I can do that in one line. and I'm starting with a virtual machine, and I can set a cluster property. What if you're going the other way? Simple. Pipe through get VM, it just works. Very, pretty much intuitive. If I'm trying to do something a little more complex, if I want to enable dynamic memory on this virtual machine, I'm starting with a cluster group. I found this VM from the cluster. Pipe it through get VM. Pipe to stop so that I stop the VM so I can enable dynamic memory. And then I enable it, and it's already done. So we just saw the links between the Hyper-V and the cluster commandlets in action. You saw the get cluster group, cluster resource, and get VM. So that's what you want to use to go between. We also saw the aliases. And then we also saw that there are a couple of cluster commands that directly accept virtual machines because it makes sense. It's specifically for virtual machines. And those are the ones like add a VM to a cluster, add cluster virtual machine, and then move, and then, of course, update, which is your refresh component. Now, speaking of update, how many of you have changed the network settings of your VM in Hyper-V Manager, then found out later you couldn't live migrate? We hear it happening quite a bit. Now, with Windows Server 2012, we're not even going to talk about that. It's not even an issue. It's not on the slide. We're not going to talk about it. Now, the one thing that's left is storage configuration changes. The cluster still needs to be aware of storage configuration changes. So how do we handle this? In the UI, if it's a clustered VM, we won't let you take those actions. We'll block and redirect whoever's trying to change the storage for a VM and say, hey, go use Cluster Manager instead. And that way, the cluster stays aware of any changes, and you'll avoid this issue altogether. In PowerShell, we take it a step further. Anytime you're doing a storage-related commandlet, trying to add a hard disk to your VM, something like that, we'll go ahead and see, is it a clustered virtual machine? If so, we're going to check with the cluster. Hey, is this path that this user is trying to change, is it a cluster accessible path? Is it good? The cluster will check, hey, it's on CSV, or it's pointing to a disk that's in the same cluster group as the VM. And if so, we'll go ahead and take that action and then automatically call update for you, so you don't even have to think about it. Now, if you're one of the folks using an alternate clustered file system, just specify this optional parameter, allow unverified paths, because we can't check. We're not aware of what paths are good when you're using one of those file systems. So just specify that and say, hey, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I said it right. Just go ahead and do it. And we'll go ahead. All right. Disaster recovery. Hyper-V replica. You probably all heard about this. This is basically replicating your VM storage from your primary site to your recovery site. Key point here, it works great in clusters. You can go from your cluster in your primary site to a standalone host on your recovery site. You can go between two clusters. You can go from a standalone host to a cluster. It all just works. If you want more details on that, go check out the session later this afternoon, Virtualization 302. And you'll learn all about Hyper-V replica. Guest clustering. How many of you have a guest cluster in your environment? Anyone? All right, some folks on the side. Okay. All right, cool. So to explain what a guest cluster is very quickly, so what we've been talking about up till now is just clustering physical hosts. It gives you protection against hardware failure and whatnot. Guest clustering means you're clustering inside of two virtual machines. And what this gives you is application protection against application failure, application mobility, all sorts of things like that. Now, historically, well, it's a guest cluster like any other cluster. You need some shared storage. And historically, that means you had to use iSCSI for the most part. But with Windows Server 2012, if you have Fibre Channel in your environment, you can connect your virtual machine directly to Fibre Channel with this virtual Fibre Channel adapter. You just attach it to the virtual machine, and the VM can directly see your SAN. And key point, this works with live migration. Using Fibre Channel with your VM doesn't break anything. It just, the VM continues to work, and it can now access storage that you can use in a guest cluster. If you want to hear more about this and see this in action, go check out Stephen Eckren's session. I believe it's tomorrow afternoon. And he'll also be talking about VM monitoring. So VM monitoring is, for those of you who don't want everything that a guest cluster gives you, or your app doesn't need it, but you still want to be aware of the application, VM monitoring will go ahead and once you configure it, it'll look for a particular event, and once it sees an event, it knows that, hey, the health is critical. So you go ahead and tell us, hey, if you see this event, the VM is in a bad state. And once we see that, the cluster will take an action that you can, again, configure. But by default, we're going to restart it because we know, hey, it's in a bad state. Let's try and get it back without you having to come and do anything. And if the critical health state persists, we're going to go ahead and fail it over to another node and then bring it back up and try to get it back into a good state without you having to do anything. Again, Steven will talk about this tomorrow afternoon if you want to hear about this in greater detail. Okay. I think we're running out of time. This timer is going crazy up here. But we just talked about a lot of the features that you'll want to take advantage of if you're going to be building a Windows Server 2012 cluster, all the mobility enhancements, consolidation opportunities you have, and, of course, better availability. Rob, anything to say?
Yes. Thank you, Lilithra. Big hand for my colleague from Hyper-V. Okay, to summarize, we've shown you the features, the new features in failover clustering in Windows Server 2012, and how it provides great infrastructure for all the workloads that you want to run on the cluster. Lilithras talked about the changes in the Hyper-V platform for Windows Server 2012. When you put it together, when you add it up, there's just a lot of great features, a lot of flexibility, a lot of high availability options for you. This gives you the ability to deliver private cloud on your terms. We're very excited about these features. Please let us know if you like them. Please stop by the high availability booth in the TLC and check out the clustering blog. Thank you very much.